Morning. Today's daf in Tzuvos is Kuf Tes. We're on Kuf Ches Amud Beis. We are starting today at the Mishnah, the upper Mishnah, not the upper. Okay, let's clarify. A lot of Mishnahs over here. Hatoin. Hatoin is Chaveira. Thank you. Okay, you thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lona Zeichen Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bar Shmuel. Okay, the structure of this parak is very simple. 2 and 7. Two halachas that were stated by Hanan. Seven statements that were stated by Edmon. Later this morning, we're going to see who does the halacha fall like in all these issues. And we're going off the board, meaning we're leaving the world of Ksuvos and we're entering into other areas of halacha. Just the common denominator between all these halachas is the Baal Memra, the one who stated these halachas. So it's Hanan and Admon. What do these two have in common? They are Dayanim. They're the judges in Yerushalayim, the Gozrei Gezeros. That's what we started with the beginning of the parak discussing. And now a continuation of halachas that were said.
How did we get into them?
Because the first halachas had to do with Ksuvos. And then that's just simply how things get organized. Meaning the first halacha has to do with Ksuvos, and then the rest of them have to do with other things. Okay. So, and all these things got bundled. Okay, everyone know the basic halacha moda b'miksas. The Torah only requires us to make a shvur on three occasions. Min haTorah, only three circumstances would result in shvur. Number one, a person has a claim against me. He doesn't have two witnesses, but he has one witness. So one witness, so I have to make a shvur. Number two is let's say moda b'miksas. Let's say he makes a claim against me and he says I owe him $100, and I say no, I don't. I do owe you 50. I admit. I don't owe you 100, so then I have to make a shvua on the other 50 that I'm claiming I don't owe. And finally, shvus pikadon. Someone entrusts me with an object, and I have a legitimate claim that says that, you know, sorry, but something happened to the object, a claim that would have exempted me from having to pay, but I have to make a shvua as well. So these are three instances in the Torah where the Torah requires make a shvua. Masechta Shavuos, having nothing to do with the Yontif coming up. So although they both revolve around the number 49. Masechta Shavuos is 49 dapim. But okay, I don't know if you want to make something of that. But the Masechta Shavuos goes through a whole bunch of circumstances where the Chachamim required to make a Shavuos on top of the Shavuos Daraisa. Okay, Moed B'Miksos is pretty straightforward. But you'll see in the course of this next little sugya coming up, there's a little bit of complexity in Moed B'Miksos. Moed B'Miksos is the straightforward standard case of Moed B'Miksos is a claim I have against you is that you owe me 100, and then your counterclaim is no, I only owe you 50. Okay, that's mode to mix us. But what if it's apples and oranges, and I kind of mean that literally, right? What if the claim and the counterclaim have nothing to do with one another, or are talking about two different things? So that's what we're going to be discussing over the course of this Mishnah. So Atoin is Chaver Kadesh Shemin. So let's say my taina against you is Kadesh Shemin. Now right now, let's propose that the Mishnah means the following. We're going to play around a little bit with what the Mishnah means, but let's propose the following. When I say Kadesh Shemin, I mean jugs of oil. And notice that there are two nouns over there. They're jugs and oil. And my claim against you is jugs of oil. V'hoda b'kankanim, and the person, the nitan, the one who's being claimed against, says, no, I only owe you jugs. Okay, so it's jugs and oil, and the counterclaim is, no, I only owe you jugs. So Admon omer ho v'hoda b'miksas satana yishava. So Admon's of the opinion, good, this is hoda b'miksas. And v'chachamim omer mimino das miksa mimin hatana. And the chachamim said, no, this is not, the claim and the counterclaim have nothing to do with one another. Amram ben Gamliel, Rowan yes, divrei Admon. And Rabbi Gamliel says, I tip my hat to Admon. I think Admon is correct, and that's where we are in the Mishnah. So that's where we are in the Mishnah, but meanwhile, it's not perfectly clear what the claim was and what the counterclaim was. Shema mina l'rabbanan. So the Gemara says like this. Now again, the way I propose the Mishnah is really the simplest way to propose the Mishnah, but then it prompts the Gemara to wonder. Shema mina l'rabbanan tanu chitim b'seorim. Let's say we have the following scenario. Let's say I come at you and I say, you know, you owe me wheat and you owe me barley. Okay, so I have a package claim against you. I deposited wheat and barley by you, and you owe it to me, and give it back to me. V'hoda b'seorim. And the counterclaim is, well, I do owe you barley. I'll give you that. So, pater. So, sounds like from the Chachamim that this is not Moed B'Miksas. Sounds like from the Chachamim, well, I mean, that's exactly the case of the Mishnah. Right? The case of the Mishnah is, you owe me jugs and oil. And the counterclaim is, I owe you the jugs. You're right about the jugs. And what did the Chachamim say in the Mishnah? The Chachamim said, that's not Moed B'Miksas. So over here, it's pretty analogous. You owe me wheat and barley. The counterclaim is, no, I only owe you barley. So, if we're going to just simply follow through with the thinking, So then he'd be exempt from more demimiksas.
Not exactly the same.
Well, thing. Hold on a second. So Gemara says that, meanwhile, the Gemara quotes in the name of Shmuel, Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel, that if the Taina goes on wheat and barley, and there was an admission to just one of them, so you're chayav. So in other words, that's a partial admission, according to Shmuel. And meanwhile, the Chachamim of our Mishnah say, you're not. So, now mind you, by the way, Admon disagrees. So, it could be that Shmuel just sides with Admon, but the Gemara would prefer if Shmuel were going like all tonight.
But the difference is that oil has to be...
Well, we'll get to that. We're going to get to that. The Gemara's going to come to that. So, and by the way, the Gemara's not going to agree with that thought, but... The Gemara is going to think it. So I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Betor Nomida. So the Gemara now is suggesting as follows. No, that's not the case of the Mishnah. The case of the Mishnah is Torah Nomida, meaning that the claim and the counterclaim is amounts. In other words, the claim is you owe me this much, and the counterclaim is no, I don't owe you that much. I owe you this much, and they're talking about amounts. So Admon. So the Gemara says, really? So the argument is amounts. So then, what's behind the sheet of Admon? Admon says that this is the case of Modem makes us. Now, if we're talking about amounts, when I say amounts, I don't mean amounts. I mean really, I do mean amounts, but I mean size, and I mean I mean volume. So if that's what we're talking about over here, so this is not exactly the case of Modeh B'Miksas. In other words, a gallon and a quart it's not the same. Modeh B'Miksas is...
But they're both units of measurement, though.
Understood. Totally.
$100, $500.
Right, correct. Right, but in other words, it's really X and Y. In other words, if we could just speak in algebraic terms, it's really X and Y, meaning they're two different units. So the Gemara says if that's true, so then that's not Modeh B'Miksas as well. So the Gemara says like this. Okay, so here's where we're going to agree, and here's where it's going to be the point of disagreement. Point of agreement goes like this. So if he says Malay Asarik, I'm sorry. Amalei Malay Asarika de Shemin Yeshu Beborcha. I have equivalent to 10 jugs of oil in your pit. So in other words, he's speaking equivalency. So then Shemin Katainle can kind of look at Tainle. So clearly the Taina over there is just an oil.
Right.
Just an oil. And Asara Kadesh Shemin Malayim Yeshli Atzlech. And if he says, I have Kadesh Shemin Malayim. Key word over there is Malayim. So then Shemin Katainle Malay. Okay, so the Gemara says, look. If I have the equivalency of 10 jugs, that's just oil. If I have 10 full jugs, so that's oil and the jugs. Gemara says, good. And those Lashonos are clear, and therefore there can be no disagreement. So the Gemara says, here's where the ambiguity comes in. Ambiguity comes in where I just simply say, 10 oil jugs. Now, I have a hard time translating that into English. I tried, in the way I formulated the sentence, to express the ambiguity, 10 oil jugs. If I said 10 jugs of oil, so...
I think that 10 jugs of oil could be either 10 jugs full of oil, or
right,
jugs
correct.
Designated for oil, so it could be just...
Correct, exactly. So in other words, the language itself expresses an ambiguity. So, asar kadishem yesh le'etzlech, adman amma yesh b'lashon azel lashon kankanem. So the way Admon understands this is that it's just going on the jugs, and therefore, and the counterclaim is going on jugs, and therefore it's modeh b'miksas and good. And Rabban and Savri, ein b'lashon azel lashon kankanem, lashon kankanem. And the Chachamim say, no, it's not going on the jugs, it's going on the oil. So Ela time of day in Balashan Azel Lashon Kankanim, Ayesh Balashan Azel Lashon Kankanim Chayev. So the Gemara says, now, if the language being expressed is both. So then what would be the halacha? The halacha would be chayv. Lema te'avati yofta de Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Dam Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Tanu chita v'sorim v'hodol abecha me'am pater. So now the Gemara says, okay, but now we have to go in the other direction. So good. So now we've satisfied the opinion of Shmuel. So now Shmuel fits in with our Mishnah. That if I make a claim, the claim is jugs and oil. The counterclaim is just going on the jugs, so good. So the Mishnah says, so that's Modeh B'Miksas, and that's good for Shmuel. Meanwhile, on the other hand, there's another Amara who disagrees, and says, no, this is not a case of Modeh B'Miksas. If a partial admission has to be part of one species, That's the only way to view partial admission. So if you hold like Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, so then what are you going to do with his position? So Amar Shimi bar Ashi Nasa Kamishanat Shetano Rimon Beklipaso. So the Gemara now is suggesting as follows. Well, maybe over here the jugs of oil is different than the case of wheat and barley. Okay, Phil tried to express this earlier, at the beginning of the sugya, and that is that wheat and barley are really two independent items. Meanwhile, jugs and oil, without the jug, the oil is kind of hard to maintain. It's a liquid, right? It's hard to maintain a liquid without something containing it. You need a container, much like you need a peel around a pomegranate. So the Gemara says, and so when I claim pomegranates, there's no way we're going to separate, right, the peel and the actual fruit itself, the pulp itself. So maskif la ravina riman below klipasola minta shema minta below kankana. So the Gemara says, yeah, you know what? We can even make a distinction when it comes to a peel and a pomegranate. What's a pomegranate without its peel? Meaning, without a peel, the pomegranate's going to go bad in the course of a day, less. So, but meanwhile, when it comes to oil, so I don't have a jug, so I'll put it in my pit. In other words, there are ways to contain oil even without the jugs. So, Ella hachaba ma'eskin and da'amar le'a sarka de'shem yesh le'atzleich. Okay, so finally the Gemara is now going to do the following. Now, again, the goal of the Gemara, just to make sure that we get the basic structure of what's going on right now, the goal of the Gemara is to explain the Mishnah and not get involved with this machlokus between the Amoraim. The Amoraim have a debate about wheat and barley, where the claim is wheat and barley, and the admission is to one of those two. Is that considered mode b'mixus? Is not considered mode b'mixus? So again, Shmuel says it is, and Rabbi Chiya says it isn't, and that's a machlokus Amoraim. So we're going to basically finesse the Mishnah. We're going to give an explanation of the Mishnah that has nothing to do with that debate, and good. And at least now the Amoraim stay clear of our Mishnah. Sorry. Let's go. So
if I claim you owe me a dollar,
yeah,
and you claim that you owe me 50 cents, since you're saying cents and I'm saying a dollar,
I understand, right.
Or if I said you owe me 100 cents, you said 50
right.
cents.
And right. I'm not sure. They're right. I'm not sure about that. I would say.
The thing is that they're sticking with the whole concept of units. They're saying that the
okay,
units are different.
I hear you. I'll tell you what. Let's table that discussion. You can for sure have it after. But just thinking right now with the structure of the Gemara. So the Gemara says Kadeshem Yesh Lef. I'm sorry. So El Hakabam Ma'iskin and Da'amar Le Asar Kadeshem Yesh Lef Lech. Okay. So I have 10 jugs of oil by you. Va'amar Le Idach Shemen Lo Hayud Var Me'Olam. And he says, look, oil, I don't know what you're talking about. Meaning, yes, he did come over my house and you dropped off jugs. But that's it. And by the way, there was no oil involved in this transaction. Okay, leave the oil out of the discussion. And furthermore, I'd also like to point out that even as far as the jugs are concerned, you're saying 10 jugs, well, that's funny. When you dropped them off by my house, I counted 5. So here we go now. So on the jugs themselves, I'm a partial admission within the jugs. So v'chamisha, I'm sorry, chamisha islach v'chamisha leislach. So now, Admon Omer Yesh B'Lashon Hazeh Lashon Kankanim. So here's how Admon understands it. Look, when he said 10 jugs of oil, so Admon understand that 10 jugs of oil mean 10 jugs. They're used for oil, but 10 jugs. And now, and with... Well, no, it could be both. I'm sorry, it could be both. It could be jugs and it could be oil. In fact, it is. It's jugs and it's oil. So then the counterclaim is oil, there was no oil. Jugs, yes, but not 10, 5. Anmo now says, here's what's going to happen. What's going to happen is there's a partial admission. You said 10 jugs, I say 5 jugs. I'm going to have to make a shvua because I'm now saying I don't owe you 5 jugs. And you know what? As long as I'm making a shvua, so now we have a concept called Gilgal. Now that I'm in the process of making a Shavua, perfect opportunity, Torah opportunity, to have to make me make more Shavuas. Where do we know this from? We know this from the Sota. In the event that the Sota is going to make a Shavua, so she makes a Shavua not only on this alleged affair, but on all previous alleged affairs as well, right? Amen va'amen is the pasuk by Sota. Next week's parsha is done so. So okay, so omigo de kamishtab by kankan de mishtab nami hashemen ayde gilgal. Good. That's behind the opinion of Admon. Okay, it is a little, now it's obviously a little more complex in terms of, we no longer have a simple explanation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah now is more complicated, but again, the reason why we're doing this is so that we're steering clear of the Amachlokis Amarayim. So the, Umiga Degam Mishabah Kankanim, Mishabah Nami Hashem, and I did Gilgal. V'Rabban and Sar, V'Yem B'Lashon Hazeh, Lashon Kankanim. Masha Tana Lo Hodulo, Masha Hodulo Lo Tano. And the Chachamim say no. Implicit in this, in the claim is not the jugs, meaning the jugs aren't the issue. It's really the oil which I'm claiming about. And you're talking about jugs. In other words, where it's apples and oranges, or in this case, it's oils and it's jugs. It's my claim, your counterclaim have nothing to do with one another, and therefore it's not a case of Moda mimics us. Okay. Next Mishnah. Haposig Mosa Chasno. Upashalo Sarego. Okay. Wonderful couple, excited to get married, and not only that, but an excited father-in-law as well. Father-in-law, I mean father-in-law, father of the bride, and not only that, but in his excitement of the enthusiasm of the kids getting married, so he promises all this money. Yeah, I'll give you a house. In other words, and he makes a pledge that he's going to give all this money. And then what the father-in-law does is he sticks out his foot. Now, I don't even think I need to explain the imagery. I think like everyone kind of understands the imagery even before I explain it. But just in case you don't get it already, Rashi writes, what does that mean? Lashon bizayonu. The father-in-law basically disparagingly looks at his son-in-law and sticks out his foot and says to him, nope. The Amar, Noe she'enu chash ledvarav toltit she'al gabe ragli. You know, could you scrape that little dirt that's off my shoe? In other words, it's basically an expression. Rashi gives another explanation as well. But basically, it's an expression of, I know I promised you all that money, but no, I'm not going to give it to you. So now, Teshev Ashitab in Rosha. So she sits until her hair gets white. It's obviously a very harsh expression, which means basically that the husband has a legitimate gripe against his father-in-law, to the point where he could basically now walk.
Leave it in limbo.
I was going to say walk away from the marriage, but in other words, no, it's worse than that. Correct, very good. Right, in other words, suspend the whole proceeding. Now, it should bother you. Tosus is bothered by the fact that, remember what we learned not that long ago, about a week ago, that when there are tonight, when there are contractual agreements that are made between his family and her family, and then they get married, so that's it. The contractual agreements are binding. Right? Tosos, top Tosos on the Amud. So, Perish Rashbam, Hadama Rav Gidol Bereisha no say, Amda V'kichu Kanu. So, we learned, it's a week ago, we learned that that all they need to do is, not all they need to do, but, in other words, if there are Tanaim, if there are agreements, contractual agreements that are made at right before the marriage, and then they get married, so now everything's binding. So, what's the issue over here? So in other words, the son-in-law is looking at his father-in-law, you know, you promised, well, if they got married, so it's more than a promise. It's a binding contractual agreement. And now all he has to do is just take his father-in-law to court, and that's it. I make it sound simple, I understand. But in other words, but the father-in-law is obligated. So why the Mishnah over here describing a scenario where the father-in-law basically doesn't have to pay? So the Gemara says, Hani mila dekachu miyad, mitocha tanai. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, the Rashbam explains, Tosos quoting the Rashbam, Rashbam is one of the Balei HaTosos, so he says, look, this idea that all the Tanaim are contractually binding is only when the Tanaim are made immediately prior to the actual marriage. Or, you made the Tanaim earlier, but immediately before the marriage, you remind each other, remember, a contractual agreement. Then the marriage creates a binding agent, and therefore everything becomes contractual. But if, let's say, you know, they sat down for dinner weeks or months before the actual marriage, and the kiddushin took place after some time, and you didn't mention the tanaim at the time, lav dvarim haniknim ba'amirahim. These are therefore not contractually binding. Good. That's how the Rashbam explains our Mishnah, and that's why now, after being promised and after having gone through Kiddushin, but they were not concurrent with one another, they were not within proximity of one another, now the husband turns to the father-in-law and says, okay, remember those promises? Father-in-law says, yeah, I remember them, but I didn't make them at the time of the marriage. It's not binding, and no, I'm not, no, no I'm just not. I'm,
why isn't it binding? He made a promise.
Good, he made a promise. He didn't make a shvua. In other words, he promised. In other words, yeah, I'll give you this, I'll give you that. He, you know. So, okay.
Statute of limitations.
Okay, so Adman Omer Yecholi Hishatomer. Okay, so Teishav Al Ashatab in Rosha. That's the opinion of the Tanakama. Adman here is going to disagree. Yecholi Hishatomer. She could say Ilu Ani Pasakti Latzmi Eishav Ashatab in Roshi. Adman says, look, let's look from her perspective. The Kala, she turned to the Chassan and said, look, you want to be angry with me because I'm the one who negotiated. I hear you. I can understand that. I get it. But Achshav She'Abba Pasak Mani Yechol Lasos. But that wasn't me negotiating, that was my father negotiated. So Okinosa Patur. So look, either let's go through with the marriage and, in other words, we'll make do with what we have, or you'll give me a divorce and we'll move on. But this state of the status of limbo is unacceptable, and it's totally unacceptable considering the fact that I wasn't the negotiator. So Amar, Rabbi Gamliel, Rowan is Divrei Adman. So once again, Rabbi Gamliel tips to the side of Adman on this machlokas. Masis and Galoki Aitana, we go right into the Gemara, and the Gemara points out that this Mishnah we just learned is not going to be consistent with the Braisa that we're going to be introduced to. Ditanya. The Gemara introduces us to a Braisa. Amar Rebbe Yosi Rebbe Yehuda Nechlechu Adman V'Chachamim Ala Posek Malsa Chasno Pashalo Asaregel Sheyechol Yishetamar Abba Pasek Alei Mani Yechol Alasos. In a scenario where dad was a negotiator and dad was the one who did not honor his pledges and promises. So here, agreement that the Kala could say to the Chassan, look, that wasn't me negotiating, that was dad who was negotiating, and what do you want from me? So either let's go through the marriage, or you'll give me a divorce, but one way or the other, but in other words, not limbo. Good. And here in the Braisa, agreement, not even a debate on this issue, as opposed to what we learned in the Mishnah, where that was the goof of the machlokas. Where is the disagreement? Aman echlku, asha paska he alatz masha chacham emomrim, where she's a negotiator and she's now talking to and she's making all these promises. Now, it's with her money, it's with dad's money. That part is not perfectly clear. Seemingly, it's with dad's money. And then again, this part's not perfectly clear. Seemingly, dad was there at the time. Again, that's ambiguous. But she's a negotiator. Chacham emomrim teishav ashatab in rosha. So here now, where she's a negotiator and she's reneging on all those promises, so now she's left in limbo, according to the chachamim. And here, Adman's going to argue the following: Adman omer yichol ahishatomer kisur anisha abanosin alai v'achshav shein abanosin alai man yichol alasa. So kenoso patur. And even here, Adman could say, "Look, I thought dad was going to back me up." Which certainly sounds like from the Gemara that even though she was the one negotiating, but you know, dad was tacitly agreeing to the negotiation, or maybe not, or maybe she just thought that you know, daddy was gonna, you know, was gonna comply with all my promises. So here Anwar says, look, she could have said, I thought I had backing, I don't have backing. So again, either we'll make do with what we have, or you give me a divorce, one or the other. Amram Gamliel Rowan is Divrei Admon. And the Braisa ends off the same way, where Rami Gamliel agrees to Admon. So we have two versions. Tano. Now the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Rashi is insistent that this Braisa, it's a short one coming up, is going on the Braisa, not on the Mishnah, and you'll see why. The Braisa makes a distinction between when she was an adult versus when she was a kid, while being the negotiator. If she's an adult, That's a Braisa. If she was a kid, then we coerce. Who? What? We coerce? Gemara now tries to get a better read of that Braisa. Kofin Laman. Who are we coercing over here? Elam La'av. Ibchami Baile. Well, we're talking about the dad. So then, if we're talking about the father, so then we should be talking about where it was, if she was a gedola. So Ella Amarava Kofin Labal Litain Get. So the Gemara says, no, coercion over here means the husband. Meaning, if the daughter was the one who was doing the negotiation, and she was a katana at the time, okay, in other words, we understand.
Is that valid?
That's exactly the point. It doesn't have any meaning, it doesn't have any bearing. She's a katana. She'll say whatever she wants to say. It has no validity, it has no legality, and so therefore, Kofin. But now, the way we understand the Braisa means, we tell the husband, well, you didn't marry her based on what she said. Did you? Meaning, she's a katana. Come on. So in other words, and now the husband's feeling that all these promises were made, but the husband doesn't really have a right, and so therefore, Kofin, we force him to give a get. That's what the Braisa means. Okay. So far, we've learned a number of halachas that were said over by, two halachas that were said by Chanan, and so far, a number of halachas that were said by Admon. We still have more to go. But meanwhile, the Gemara is going to take a moment to pause and to tell us. Amar Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar, Mishmei Dechizkiya, Kol Makom Shamar Rabbi Gamliel, Ro'anis Divrei Admon, Halacha Kamoso. Hopefully you noticed that in these last Mishnahs that we did together, right, this Mishnah, the Mishnah prior to that, and even the Mishnah prior to that, meaning the past three Mishnayos, so you notice that Admon had an opinion, and Rabbi Gamliel says, I agree with Admon on these viewpoints. So the Gemara says, Halacha Kamoso, the Halacha falls like him. Meaning, like Rabbi Gamliel, who agrees with Admon? Amalei Rav LeRav Nachman Afilu B'Braisa. What about the Braisa we just learned? So Amalei Mikamina B'Mishnah B'Chol Makom. Now, if you listen carefully, I didn't say B'Mishnah. I said B'Chol Makom. B'Chol Makom Shemar Gamliel Kamina. Now that part's a little bit tricky, and Tosos already points out the Mishnah and the Braisa don't agree with one another. They're two different versions of what the Machlokus is about. We can paskin like the Mishnah and the Braisa. So Tosos just simply points out, whichever one we side with, in either way, we're going to go like Admon because Rabbi Gamliel sides with Admon. I'm Rabbi Zera, I'm Rabbi Bar Yirmiyah, Rabbi Yisvram, Shammah Chanan, Halacha Kayotzebo. The two halachas that were said by Chanan, the halacha follows Kayotzebo. What does that mean, Kayotzebo? Rashi says, it means like Rav Yochanan and Zakkai, who agrees with Chanan. I mean, it sounds like from the Gemara, had it just been Chanan by itself, that wouldn't have necessarily created the halacha psuka. But the fact that Rav Yochanan and Zakkai is signing with Chanan, okay, that's the first two halachas. And then the last, Shiva Dvarim Shamar Admon, Ein Halacha Kayotze Bo. So, but on the seven things that were said by Admon, the halacha does not follow Kayotze Bo. That last statement, however, not clear what that means. My Kamar. What does that last statement mean? Ile ma'achi kamar shnei dvarim shamar chanan alacha kamosa v'chayotze bo v'shiva dvarim shamar admon en alacha kamosa v'lo kayotze. So the Gemara says that when it comes to Chanan, are we saying that the halacha falls like the two halachas of Chanan? And when it comes to Admon, the halacha does not follow like anything he says. The Gemara says, yeah, but we just got done learning. We just got done saying that when Rami Gamaliel agrees with Admon, we follow like Admon. So again, start off with the same starting point. Halacha falls like Chanan together with Rav Yocham and Zakkai. Shiva Dram Shamar Admon, Ein Halacha Kayotze Bo, Hakamoso Halacha Bekulo. So the Halacha does not follow like Rabbi Gamliel, but only like when Admon says it on his own. So the Gemara says, but again, how did that help? V'Hamar Rav Yitzchak Ben Elazar Mishmei Dechizkiya Kol Makom Shamar Rabbi Gamliel Ro'anis Divrei Admon Halacha Kamoso. Amar in Lo Amar Lo. Only when Rabbi Gamliel sides with Admon does the Halacha fall like Admon. And when he doesn't, the Halacha doesn't fall like him. Third try and third time is a charm. Elahachi kamar shnei dvarim shamar chanan alacha kamosa v'chayotze bo shiva dvarim shamar admon yesh mehem shalacha kamosa v'chayotze bo v'yesh mehem she'in alacha kamosa elakayotze bo. So sometimes when Admon speaks, alacha falls like him. Sometimes it doesn't. B'chol makom shamar gamliel ro'an is divrei Admon alacha kamosa in achlo. When Rabbi Gamliel tilts in the favor of Admon, that's when the halacha falls like Admon. And when Rabbi Gamliel doesn't say anything, that means the halacha does not fall like Admon. Why does the Gemara put that in over here? Because this is a break. Meaning, the three Mishnahs that we did previously are the three times where Rabbi Gamliel sides with Admon. So in those three circumstances, we fall like Admon. In the upcoming Mishnahs that we're about to see, the halacha does not fall like Admon. Okay, I was going to say, nothing here is helping me with time. Ha'orir al hasada v'hu chasam ala be'ed. Okay. Reuven's got a serious issue. And Reuven's issue is that there's a piece of property out there that he knows he's the owner of. He's the rightful owner of it. Taken away from him, forcibly. And it was in the hands of Shimon, but Reuven's point is that I know Shimon bought it, and I know Shimon bought it rightfully, but Shimon bought it from Levi. And Levi took it from me. Not Levi. So, Reuven is now protesting. Now remember, the halach is that if you live 3 years on a land unoccupied with nobody protesting, so then that land is yours. But here, Reuven is making a call. Reuven is saying, this is not right. Levi just took the land from me, and Levi then sold it to Shimon, but that land really belongs to me. They're going to work it out in court. But in the meantime, however, something interesting occurs. V'hu chasam ala ba'ed. Shimon is selling the land on the market. And the and Reuben goes over and says, oh, well, you know what? You're selling the land? Perfect. Let me help you. What do you need me to do? You want me to be a witness on the document, on the title? No problem at all. So Reuben there signs the document, now identifying that Shimon has successfully sold the land to somebody else. Okay. And so the question on the table is, I'm going to phrase the question a little bit differently than the Mishnah, but you'll see, smart or dumb. What Reuven just did. Now Reuven now has been for a while been protesting that owner, he's been saying that he's the owner of the land. He's the rightful owner of the land. And now he signs off on this document. So yeah, good or no good. Smart or not smart. So Orel Asadav Chasam Allah Be'ed. Adman Omer Hasheni Noch Lavarishan Kashahemenu. So Adman says smart. Because now, basically, look, what Reuven's goal is to get the land back. And Levi took it from him, and obviously he had nothing against, he couldn't compete against Levi. Levi took it from him. And Shimon bought it from Levi, but Shimon also is pretty tough. And now, finally, Reuven sees an opportunity where the land's going to get sold to this person, and he knows this person's somebody who he thinks he can, you know, he can basically shoo him off the land. Now again, that person who just bought the land, he may or may not have recourse. But again, Reuven's goal over here, we're just looking at it from the perspective of Reuven. Reuven wants to get his land back. So Adman says the fact that he signed on this title is not a relinquishment of his protest. If anything, he's doing it as a means of getting the land back. That's Adman's opinion. The Chachamim Omrim Ibed Zechusa, and the Chachamim said no. No. The fact that he signed on this title, transferring it from one person to another, he from that point forward loses his right to claim ownership of that property. If you're signing off on the sale of this property to another party, that basically means that's it. You know it doesn't belong to you. Good. That's the machlokis between Admon and the Chachamim. And here, as we just learned, we don't have the backing of Rabbi Gamliel in this Mishnah. So in this regard, the halacha is not going to go like Admon. The halacha is going to go like the Chachamim. Also, simla acher ibed ezechusa. Okay, next case in the Mishnah. Same starting point. Reuven's been claiming now he's been this field really belongs to him, and Levi took it away from him, and Levi sold it to Shimon. Okay, and now in this next case in the Mishnah. This land is not being sold, and adjacent land is being sold. Now, every time a piece of land is sold, so you identify the bordering properties. You identify the bordering properties and who the owners of that bordering property is. So here now, it's not even the sale of this property, it's the sale of an adjacent property, and now he, Reuven, is signing on this title. Here, everyone agrees, he gives up his right to ever protest the sale of that land again. Because unlike in the first case, when we're actually selling the land in question, so then he could say, look, here's my strategy. I wanted it to go from the hands of Shimon to somebody else, because I think him I can knock off. But here, in an adjacent field, like, what's your strategy? And in the title actually states the boarding properties, and it states this property owned by Shimon. So Reuven, what did you gain over here by signing on that? The fact that you signed on that is now a relinquishment of your right to protest that property. Amar Abaye. Lo shanu ela eid aval dayin lo. Now, the Gemara makes a distinction over here between what kind of participation you had in the transaction. If you were a witness, so that, again, going like the Chachamim, no, that's no good. Meaning because you're now basically signing off on this property being sold from Shimon to another party. You're signing on it. You obviously know what's happening right now. So you relinquish your right. What if you're a judge? Now, judge over here does not mean... judge over here strictly means kium shtaros, certification of the signatures. We know, we learned in the second parak of Ksuvas, this takes us way back, somewhere in the Chafs of the Masechta, that any time that a document is going to be used, it has to be authenticated. The two witnesses who signed on the document, their signatures need to be authenticated. There are three ways of authentication. Not for now, just reminding us what we learned some time ago. And and what happens is that you authenticate in front of the judges, and the judges then sign on the document, and they write, we, the judges, have seen the authentication of the signatures, and they write just a small little note on the document itself. Okay, good. That's authentication. Do they have to read the document in order to authenticate the signatures? And the answer is no, they don't. And that's exactly the point of the Gemara. Because they don't have to read the document, so if you had one of the judges who was protesting the land, so he doesn't, and all he did was authenticate the signatures, he wasn't expected to read the document. And therefore, he could very well say at a later point in time, my field that I claim that I own? He doesn't lose his right to protest. That's exactly the point of the Gemara. Aval dayin lo ibe zechusa didni Rabbi Chia in aidim chos men lashtar elim kem karahu. It's a good rule for life, but it's on top of that also a halacha that whenever you sign a document, so you got to read the document. So aval hadayanem achasum and afa pi shelo karahu. But when you have witnesses who are just being ma'asher, they're just certifying a signature. So there, they don't have to read the document. All they're doing is just certifying the signature, and therefore they don't have to read the document because that's not their purpose. The purpose is just to ratify. There is a discussion. You know. Anytime you go to a wedding, right? You're asked to sign on a ksuva. I mean, some people are makpid, some rabbanim are makpid, but generally speaking, no one reads the ksuva. But in defense of everyone who doesn't read the ksuva, which is I think most people, yeah, it's a standardized document. There's nothing, right? There's not going to be that many surprises in the ksuva that's written nowadays. Okay. Asal siman la'acher. Amar Rabbi Lo Shano Ela La'acher Vala Atzma Lo Ibn Zechusa. So let's say the adjacent field was not sold to another party, but let's say the adjacent field was sold to you, the one protesting the field right next door. Then you didn't lose your right. And why not? So in the Ali, because imagine, I love this scene. You're right now to buy the adjacent property, and there you're going to make a whole stink. You know, I'm about to buy this property, but I want everyone here to know that the adjacent property, that also belongs to me. Everyone's going to look at me and think, what about me? I'm a kook. What? In other words, really? This is what you're talking about now at the sale? You know, what's going to happen is that later on, you're going to say the same thing about this property. So my yisach lememra, yibayla lememsa moda, and maybe what the Gemara says, well, maybe what he should do is as follows. Right, you probably heard this terminology right before Rosh Hashanah, right, where you basically tell the judges who are going to forgive you for all the vows that you made over the course of the year, and I'm serving notice that any vows that I make for the upcoming year also going to be null and void. Right, this is mimsa moda, serving notice. And so maybe what he could do is he could pull the witnesses aside and say, look, I'm buying the adjacent field, but you see that field next door? And I know on this document we're going to point out the borders and the owners of the bordering fields. I'm just telling you, between you and I, he doesn't own it, I own it. Meaning, but I know that's not why we're here today. We're here so that I can buy this field. But you should know, though, however, I'm serving notice that I'm not in on the idea that next door field belongs to him. It doesn't really belong to me. Okay? And he pulls the witnesses aside. Gemara says that's also not going to be effective. Because we have a general rule, the Gemara says it a couple of times, chavrcha chavrislei, because you know your friend has friends. And, oh by the way, v'chavr de chavrcha chavrislei. And you know their friends also have friends. It's called word of mouth. I think we're all familiar. And so, right. And so you serve notice, and you're thinking you're pulling the witnesses aside. You're not pulling the witnesses aside, meaning you'll tell them privately, and of course they'll tell everyone else privately. And you know the definition of a secret: something you tell somebody else one person at a time. Okay, it's a good one. It's not going to help. So if you're buying an adjacent field, you don't lose your right to protest your ownership to the neighboring field. How would also similar acher? I'm sorry. How would also similar acher? Okay, a person signed as a witness on a field, and the neighboring field is the one that he forever has been challenging, but he did sign as a witness on the neighboring field. And as we learned in our Mishnah, that's it. You lost your right to protest your ownership of the neighbor of the adjacent field. Ir er v'shachiv v'ukim apachapa. So now he continued protesting even after signing as a witness, and right before he died, and then he died, and now somebody's there to be a custodian of the estate. Asa apachapa zekame de'abai yamar le'asa simla acher ibed zechusa. So he goes to Abai and he says, look, I know the estate that I'm executing right now. I know that he signed on a document that's on a field adjacent. I understand that. And Abai says, well, I hope you understand that, because once he signed on the adjacent field, he lost his right to any type of claim to that to his field. So Amar Yihave Avon Dias Mekayim Havatayin V'Amar Tell Him Echad Asisilach. So he says, well, you know, had he been here, you know what he would have told you? Yes, he did identify the border. But do you know what he was agreeing to? One row. Yeah, you're right. Right. The neighboring field is marked out on this property. And yes, it's true the owner of this estate the late owner of this estate, yes, it's true he signed. But what he was only agreeing to was that one row, the actual border itself, is owned by the other participant. The rest of the field still belongs to him. I'm really Shabi Kamart. Oh, so Abai says, oh, that's good. That's a good argument. I'm Rav Yochanan Imtan Vamar Talmechad Asisulach Neman. So Zil Havle Mias Talmechad. So, okay. Fine, that's an excellent argument, and so now, okay, but at least now he's entitled to one furrow. So Havi Allah, I'm sorry, tell him Echad. Havi Allah Rechva Dedekla. So and meanwhile, on that one furrow was a row of trees. So Amar Lei Havi Avon Dias Mekayim. So once again, the Apotropos does an excellent job defending, and he says, look, had the principal been alive, to have a time Amar Chazati V'Lakachti Mimenu. You know, it's true that at the time when I signed the adjacent property, and yes, I did identify that furrow as a marker, and yes, there was an admission that furrow belonged to him, but then, chazati v'lakachti. But then, as a claim, I'm telling you that I purchased it from him. Amrei shapi kamart. So he says once again, that's a good claim. Amar Rav Yochanan imtan v'amar chazati v'lakachti mimenu neman. If he says that I purchased it from him, so he has nemanus. Why does he have nemanus? So this gets to a tricky discussion. I'll just point you in the direction of Rashi. It's there's much to discuss about this. Rashi says apesh asar apesh hitter. This operates on the principle of migu. Take a look at Rashi. I'm sorry for giving such a short version of this discussion, but take a look at Rashi for Rashi arguing why he has ne'emanus in such a situation. Amar Abai Haiman demukim apetropa nukim kiha diadal afuche b'tzchusa diasme. And Abai says, look, in general, if you are ever going to appoint some sort of executor of an estate, make sure that he knows what he's doing. Like this guy, for example, says Abaye. This guy was excellent. Meaning that despite the fact that the late owner of this estate signed off in an adjacent field, and under normal circumstances that forfeits your right to any type of claim to the adjacent properties, because signing off on the adjacent property is basically an admission that you no longer own any of the adjacent properties, but somehow this executor was able to successfully argue that the late owner did in fact own the adjacent property. He only was admitting to that one furrow. Even that one furrow, he admitted that he bought it back, that one furrow, and the executor did such an excellent job advocating on behalf of the estate. Abai says, when you look for an apotropos, look for somebody like that. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here, and tomorrow we pick it up with the Mishnah.